Talk Show.
Recorded live.
Hi, welcome to Liberty Alliance here on Talk Show. Tonight, main focus is going to be on the town courts and the problems within our court system and how we can go about dealing with those problems and regain our republic here back in New York. But first, I want to go through a few things. On Saturday, not this Saturday, next Saturday the 13th, we're going to be heading up to Gouverneur St. Lawrence. We're looking for a few volunteers who might want to head up with us. I know there's going to be at least three of us at this point. We can take on our ride at least one more person or others that might be going up. There's buses that will be going up. We'll put that information out on our website. I'll try to get that out tonight on our website, newyorkcommittymen.org, and we'll probably put it over in the calendar area. Anybody that's heading up that way, either with us or without us, if you want to come over to our table, we're going to be setting up a table and taking signatures for our court cases to save the sheriff of one and to get rid of all gun laws here in New York State of the other one. So those are two. We're thinking of filing a third lawsuit, but again, it all depends on money. One of the things we want to do is we want to grow this group. I see tonight there seems to be a lot of new people in here, and the usuals, I don't see too many of them. I know Gerard wasn't going to be in here tonight. So we are starting to grow, but we need to grow more. And our focus, of course, is organizing the entire state in order to bring back our republic here, and we do have a viable plan. But anyway, on the 13th, we're heading up to sign up people for those two lawsuits particularly and pass that information on our website and our plan to save the republic. We are starting to travel the state again for giving presentations on our viable plan to save the republic and for organizing in each and every of the counties to give people and to show people how they can get political and judicial power. There are three powers. We've talked about this many times, but I'll bring it up briefly. There are three powers that govern a man and that makes a man for what he is, and without those powers, he's nothing. The first and foremost, of course, is spiritual power, and that's between you and your God and your prayer closets. We do give Bible studies, by the way, online. We have a lot of recorded Bible studies on newyorkcommittymen.org, but we don't get too involved in pushing any particular teaching. We just tell people, work things out with the Lord yourself. Another power that people need in order to control their destiny is political power. If we don't have political power, you have no control of your destiny whatsoever. And right now, we the people do not have political power. And that's part of our plan, is to teach people how to have political power without the politics. George Washington spoke about these politics. He said it was a problem and it would be the destruction of our country. He called it right, and he laid out exactly what would happen to this country should they go the route they were going. And we are where he said we would be. We do have a small window of opportunity at this point to recapture this system and take it back, but time is running out quick. It's up to people to step up to that. The third power is of course, judicial power, and that's the justice system. If we don't have justice, if we don't have a court of law, a court of order, if we don't have obedient judges that obey justice, that obey the laws of the land, we have nothing. So we need those three powers, and that's what we teach about here in with newyorkcommittymen.org and our group here, also as Liberty Alliance. So just getting back to our presentations, we're heading up to a county, Chatta, let me think about this, I know I can pronounce this, Chattahoochee, I think it's called. It's all the way on the western side of New York State, down over, I think by Jamestown, I think it is. But anyway, it's close to Pennsylvania. It's about, for us, I'm in Dutchess County, for us it's about 5.5 to 6 hour trip. But we're heading out there on the 20th. That'll be a Saturday. The program, the presentation on power is going to start at about 11 a.m. We have numerous groups that are gathering together out there. We've been working pretty diligently over the past year out in the western part of the state. We've got a lot of activity going up in Niagara and Erie County. And there's a lot of other, you know, straggling counties sort of through the central of the state that have been participating and following along with what we're doing and jumping into the game. We also have been working in Monroe County. We're working to get up to Monroe County. I am talking to some individuals up there, and we're going to go up there and give another presentation. We've given them presentations on the committee man process, the political power, but we haven't given them anything on the judicial power. But going back to the western part of the state, there's probably about five or six, maybe seven counties in that general area that we're going to try to tie in for this presentation on that Saturday. So anybody up in that neighborhood wants to come in, we will be posting that information up on the website, as soon as we have the times and the date. Well, we have the date and the time approximately. I got to confirm it and we'll be in the location. So we will be listing all this information up on our calendar. People should check our calendar as often as possible to see what's going on and where we're going to be. We're heading down shortly to Staten Island. We're probably going to be tying in Manhattan and Queens. We'll get some word out to the Bronx and Brooklyn maybe. But generally, we're a couple of the boroughs down there. There's quite a few different groups that I need to tie together. They're all interested in having this presentation. So we'll probably do it out. We're definitely going to do it out on Staten Island if we have to make a second trip. You know, we've been down to these. We've done in Queens. We've been in Manhattan. We'll go back down again. Out on the Long Island, I'm hoping to get something back out there again soon. I'll be talking with a few people out there. We haven't got anything particularly that we're in conversation with people. And where else? Oh, we also have been talking to people down in Rockland County. No, not Rockland County. I'm sorry. Westchester County. They're very interested in getting a meeting down there for a presentation. We're going to work on pulling Putnam, Rockland, Putnam, Rockland, and Westchester County. I'm hoping to make some good contacts up in St. Lawrence, not this Saturday, like I said, but next Saturday when we go up to Gouverneur in St. Lawrence County. And that's going to be a gun rally up there, so I'm sure we're going to be able to make up a lot of sign-ups, and we'll probably get some contacts and hopefully be invited up there to give some presentations. That area is kind of sparsely populated. I guess the part of St. Lawrence we're going to, I guess, has some reasonably good-sized population, but a lot of that area covers into the mountains and rural areas. So we have not had many contacts up that way. We're also looking to try to get back into the more of the central eastern part of the state. That would be up in Albany, Schoharie, Montgomery, Schenectady, Fulton, Oswego. And we do have contacts and people in all those areas. We'll be giving them calls, and we'll probably set something up in that way also. We just had a presentation out in Greene County, and we'll be probably, because it's close to me, I go up there a lot, and next week we're going to have probably a roundtable. I think it's going to be Thursday. We're going to get into discussion and details of the different things that people can do and kind of a learning process on how to work into the courts and how to deal with the judges and all that stuff. So, again, anybody from any county, if they want to organize something, and give me a call. My phone number is out on the website on newyorkcommittee.org under contact. You can email me. You can phone call me. You can Skype me. You can fax me. And you can get me here, of course, on Mondays. And we'll organize something, of course, you know, try to get the surrounding counties, the sister counties, and get as many people together as possible. We need to organize. There's not much time left. The gun issue is a big issue, and it's pulling a lot of new people in, so we're going to take advantage of that, of course, and that's why we're going and chasing after a lot of these programs that are, you know, these rallies. I talked with John Wallace. For those who know John Wallace, he's the Northeastern contact, I guess, or whatever, for the Old Keepers. He was also a delegate at the Continental Congress 2009, which a lot of people don't know about. But we're talking about trying to uplift the Continental Congress's work because it's so closely related to the gun issue. They were very specific on what needs to be done in every state. We did do I think the last week or the week before we talked about the Continental Congress. I think we talked a couple of times, so anybody who wants to get more in-depth information about that, they can go back and listen to past episodes. And, of course, you can bring up your questions here after we open the phone lines up. So we want to get that going. We're talking with, Stuart Rhodes, and we're seeing if he wants to work with us to try to uplift and use the connection between the gun issue and the Continental Congress to get that out there. This is probably one of the most important things we could do, is get this information out on the Continental Congress. We really have to saturate the area, saturate the entire state, and let people know that the Continental Congress met and they came up with all the solutions to our problems, and but they've gone totally ignored by both the media and the, of course, our servant government. And for those who don't know, 140 people were elected as delegates and went to St. Louis, Missouri, back in 2009, and they produced the Article of Freedom, which they released on Christmas Eve, but they served on our servant government throughout the entire country on April 19th. We do have information and video on a lot of this stuff. We have a road to the Continental Congress 2009 up on our website under today's issues. You'll see the sheriff on the one side and the Continental Congress on the other side, and then below quite a few other issues that are very important that we should all know about and be concerned about and involved within. Let me see what else we have here. So we need to build our ranks. We need to try to pull as many people into this, call every Monday as often as possible. I know people can't make every call maybe, but, we do get people in and out, and we need to build our ranks. We need to organize every single county in the state of New York. I heard some people talking about this earlier, and that's exactly what we are in the process of doing. We've been touring the state now for 4 years, teaching people various things, and now we've put together a very good viable plan. And so we have good contacts with most of the liberty groups throughout the state of New York, and we're trying to tie them together in common causes. And this gun issue and the Continental Congress it seems to be the perfect storm for us to latch on to and to ignite. And so this is, I think, what we need to be doing. Okay, so tonight we're going to briefly look just a little bit at the courts. We're going to talk a little bit about town courts and the problems. Thomas Jefferson said, if the people expect to be ignorant and free, they expect what never was and never will be. We have to get knowledge. We have to get political knowledge. Not politics, political. We have to understand how the process works. We have to get of godly knowledge, of course, first and foremost, and that's in your prayer closet. And we have to get judicial knowledge. We have to know how to go to courts. I have found some unbelievable things since I've been looking into the court systems, and we wrote a book on court access, by the way, which is available for free up on newyorkcommittyman.org. Click on the judicial area, and then click on the tab that says court access. And I think there's 10 zip downloads. I will be updating that stuff shortly. You'll see a date up there, so keep an eye on it, and you'll see a new date coming up soon. We're going to be updating a lot of that stuff. We've got a lot of new good stuff. And one of the things we're working on, and we've pretty much almost got to perfection, I think, is dealing with the town courts. Now, as those people who have been looking at our websites and been involved with us for a while and coming to these programs here on Monday nights, most of you are aware of the fact that statutes are not law. And that is the huge message we have to get out. Statutes are not law. They have taken over our court system and brought us into the Roman law system or the statutory law system, the municipality law system. There's numerous names for that. In order for them to have jurisdiction over you in those courts, you have to plead. And if you refuse to plead, they cannot get jurisdiction over you. Even if you were arrested for something and had to deal with a situation or a problem where they want to put you in jail, let's say, and they have to arraign you. If you continue to reject a pleading and say that, let them know they don't have jurisdiction over you, and as long as you understand how this process works and what you need to tell these people, chances are they're not going to put you in jail. They're not going to let go of you very quickly either, but they'll probably let you go on your own recognizance because they won't be able to set bail if you don't give them the consent for them to have jurisdiction over you. That is the key to freedom. You know, statutes are not law. This is very clear. We have huge amounts of evidence, mountains of evidence to prove this. When we go into courts, they can't argue or deny it. Every case we are involved with, we've been involved with a few on the town level, of course. And eventually they let loose of the people because they don't give them the jurisdiction. When this country was founded, we were founded as the people. We the people founded this government, and we ordained and established the Constitution for the United States of America, not for us. I don't have constitutional rights. I have unalienable rights. The constitutional rights are something that we have defined for our government to lay off, to stay out of. This is where you work. This is what you got to do. And we put them in a box in the Constitution, and then we gave them the Bill of Rights, and we let them know, you know, this isn't all our rights, but these are some of the most important ones, and you know, don't mess around with them. Well, they violate every single one of them because we let them know, because we are ignorant. I speak to myself first, but we are ignorant. And again, Thomas Jefferson, if the people expect to be ignorant and free, forget about it. It never was and never will be. So just forget about it. You can't have freedom and ignorance. They don't work. It's oil and water. So you're either going to have the ignorance and be a slave, or you're going to become free. And the process starts with thinking free, and then acting out that thought, and then indeed you are free. We've got lots of cases going on. We're in the middle of a lot of them. We do put them up online. We've got some really interesting cases. We haven't even posted yet, and we'll be getting them up there. We're even doing some IRS cases, and when we get to that, we'll start posting those too. We have some really very interesting cases. But back to the town courts. Let me just read John Wallace, I think it was. Yeah, that guy was. John Wallace mentioned to me, he said to me, John, why don't you think you can get a hold of, put together some kind of a card that people can stick in their wallets, and if anything happens, they get arrested or something, they can pull out that card and read it to the judge and, you know, and challenge the jurisdiction. And I was thinking of doing that, and I told him, okay, I'll put something together. We did put a plan together on how to deal with the town courts, and we've written out an entire plan of instructions and written the papers. We've got a generic form where you have to do is kind of fill in the spaces, the name of the court, the name of the, you know, your name, and a few other pieces of information, and sign on the bottom, and you hand it in, and you challenge the jurisdiction. We have a follow-up and a procedure. We have put together a form. Again, it's a generic structure because everything is jurisdiction. You're challenging jurisdiction. They do not have jurisdiction over you, and unless you give consent, how do you plead? Guilty or innocent or no contest? I think I'm going to plead not guilty. And now they got consent. That's it. They're going to try you, and trust me, they always find you guilty. The question will be: is how guilty? If you participate in your game and go out and buy yourself a lawyer and all that stuff, well, you'll probably become half guilty. You know, if you're going to go to jail, maybe they'll just give you a stiff fine or something. And everybody goes into court, and then they thank the judges. They walk out after they've been screwed by this guy. They pay their fine or serve their time, and that's it. There are so many things we have discovered in these courts that are not true. And we have papers for every one of them to file with the courts to make our argument. I've been told numerous times I cannot practice law. Lie from hell. I can practice law anywhere I please, and I do not need a license. There is no such thing as a license to practice law. It does not exist. We wrote a paper on that. We have that in our... I think it's part of our course right now. If not, it will be, because it's something I am working to update that paper. So, but I think we have one up there, and we will be updating. And if we don't have one up, it'll be up there soon. But anyway, that's a lie from hell. The second thing, the main thing is that the Supreme Court does license attorneys, and I don't think they call it a license. I forget what they call it, but some kind of an approval system, for the purpose of dealing with wards of the court. In other words, if you're going to represent a ward of the court, you have to be in this list of and they call them attorneys. And award of the court, which you have to understand, award of the court is either an infant or a moron. So anybody who goes out and gets it, or an idiot, a moron, idiot, same thing. Well, actually, it's a different level. But in any event, I think it's idiot. So you're an idiot if you go out and get a lawyer. You need to represent yourself. If you get a lawyer, you're going to be under statutes. If you represent yourself, you're going to be under the law of the land. I have discovered an alarming thing. Lawyers or attorneys, whatever you want to call them, they have no clue on what the law is. They do not practice law. They practice statutes. They practice the process of making you a slave. They work with the court system. They work with the judge to find you guilty. And again, depending on numerous things, on what level of guilt you're going to get. But that's the game, and that's what goes on. If you get arrested with a gun, for instance, and you don't have a permit for a gun, and we do have a situation of a case where someone was picked up without a gun, and within an hour after the process, they were back out in the streets, and when he left, they gave him his gun back. And these guns were not registered here in New York. So you can beat the process. Usually it isn't that easy. This particular individual, they probably called the sheriff of his county where he used to live, and they probably told him, you better leave this guy alone and drop him like whatever, because you're going to have nothing but problems. And so they threw him out of the police station and gave him his gun back. But in any event, you know, all these things are dealt with in town courts. And the reason why they're dealt with in town courts is because they can't deal with them in the Supreme Court, because the Supreme Court is supposed to be a common law court. Although it, too, is a statutory court. It's supposed to be a common law court. They will not take these misdemeanors, or whatever you want to call them, and sometimes they call them felonies, and they will not take them into the Supreme Court. The risk is way too high for the judges to go to jail for violating the constitutional rights or the unalienable rights of people. So they push them off into the town courts, and the town courts don't have any jurisdiction over anybody who understands that they're one of the people and not one of the U.S. citizens or not one of the subjects as defined in the 14th Amendment. And again, you know, we can get into the specifics on this. But let me read real quick, and then I'm going to open the phone lines up. Here is a wallet. I couldn't get it to a wallet size, for, you know, like a little card or anything. But what I could get it down is to just a little bit bigger than a dollar bill. And so you could stick it in your wallet. Women could stick it in their purses. You know, if you got a bifold or a trifold wallet, it'll definitely fit in those. Maybe you can get it laminated so it'll last longer. Just replace it every so often. But this is pretty much what it says. I'm going to read it, and then we'll open the phone lines. When you're brought before a judge and he's going to ask you, well, how do you plead? You're innocent or guilty? And your response has got to be the following. I am here by special appearance or abduction. If you've actually been arrested, then I'm here because I've been abducted to be here. Kidnapped, whatever word you want to use. But anyway, I am here. Usually you'll get a ticket and you get an appearance ticket. So you say, I'm here for a special appearance. I'm not going to define these words because they will be defined in the back of this paper. A special appearance means that you're not giving them any kind of a consent for anything. So I'm here by a special appearance, not to plead, but to challenge the court, this court's jurisdiction, and I move this court to take judicial notice upon which a judge is bound to act without having it proved in evidence of the following U.S. Supreme Court rulings. And that's right out of Black's Law, 4th edition. And here are these Supreme Court rulings. This is Cruden versus Neal. Every man is independent of all laws except those prescribed by nature. He is not bound by any institution formed by his fellow men without his consent. Therefore, this court to proceed without my consent would be a deprivation of my unalienable rights and conspiracy under color of law under U.S. codes, and then we quote a whole bunch of U.S. codes under 18 and 42. Next thing, the common law, and this is also take judicial notice of Self versus Ray. The common law is the real law, the supreme law of the land, the codes, which is the Supreme Court law of the land. The codes, the rules, the regulations, the policies, the statutes are not the law. Higgins versus Levine. The law requires proof of jurisdiction to appear on the record. No such proof appears on that record, on this record of this court. And therefore, the charges against me are pretend law, an act of fraud, and this court must release me. Stuck versus medical examiners. Jurisdiction must be documented and shown and proven to lawfully exist before a cause may lawfully proceed in the courts. This court is a statutory court created by statutes and preceded by statutes, which is not law. For this purpose, this court must release me. And the final is Frenat versus State. Where the court is without jurisdiction, it has no authority to do anything other than to dismiss the case. Therefore, this court lacks personam jurisdiction. To proceed would be an act of defiance against the Supreme Court, an act of war against the Constitution, and an act of fraud upon me. This court is barred. Its only legal action is to dismiss. And that's pretty much it. And it'll be on like a dollar-sized bill type thing. In the back, we'll probably have some definitions. And then we have a page of instructions. And we have all this stuff, a lot more, that's in writing. I think it's 8 pages. So, you know, you file with the courts. If you get a summons, you mail in and file with the courts your answer, which is the challenge of the jurisdiction, which has this similar kind of language in here, but a lot more, 8 pages worth. And it puts that judge into on notice that he needs to let you go because he doesn't have any authority or any jurisdiction over you. But we also have the process by which to go forward with should they not release you. And they will try to call you back over and over and over again. They'll do every trick in the book trying to get jurisdiction over you to get you to plead. We've covered all these bases. We've been through it enough. We know the ins and outs. And we've got an answer to every problem that they bring up. Problem, we have a solution that they might throw at you. And so this is all put together. It's pretty simple. It's mostly just reading and filing papers. There is a final, depending on if you want to sue them or not. You see, the moment they arrest you or try to arrest you and then don't let you loose, remember, you could be in custody. It's called constructive custody. If you have to go to court one day, well, you can't be out at the beach enjoying yourself. You got to go to court that day. So you're in constructive custody. That's why every day you're in constructive custody is worth a certain amount. If they put you in jail and you're sitting in jail, Vic, in this battle, well, we happen to know that jail is worth between $25,000 and $50,000 a day. You ask for $50,000, we'll get $25,000. Within reason. I mean, you know, if you're there for a few years, it's quite a few millions of dollars. You may not get that much. But in any event, there is a rule to these things, and it's all under U.S. codes. So you sue the judge, you sue the prosecutor, you sue the arresting officer, and if necessary, in some cases, you could even sue the bailiff. You try not to hold him too liable, but sometimes he may need to be held liable. Anyway, that's kind of the overall picture. I'm going to open phone lines up, and we'll have some conversation on this subject or any of the other subjects we do discuss here in the Liberty Alliance. So let me open the phones up. Okay, phone lines are open. Anybody has a question or a comment, mics are open. Phones are open.
Do you have that dollar bill on the website?
Can you speak a little louder?
Do you have that dollar bill?
Have that dollar bill on the website?
Not yet. I've got it on my laptop, and I'm still kind of breezing through it, and I want to get the instructions together. It will be under the label. It'll be found on newyorkcommitteeman.org. You click on the judicial process on the left side, click on court access, one of the tabs on the top of that page. Uh-huh. When you come down, there'll be zips, and one of the zips is called, Challenging Court, Town Court's Jurisdiction. It's zip number 10. I do not have that dollar bill size thing yet there, but I will be updating that shortly. The date that I last updated this page was 3/17, and so when you see a later date, like tomorrow or tonight or something, Yeah, I'm going to probably try to work on it tonight or tomorrow. And so in the next day or two, you'll see April 2nd or something, then you know it's been updated. And so I will get it up there shortly. And we give very, very specific and detailed instructions on how to deal with the town courts. And, of course, we're available by phone at any time, day or night, and here on Mondays, and through email and so on and so forth. And what, this is one of the things we're doing, by the way. We're trying to establish study groups in every county of the state. We have 62 counties, but we're trying to establish study groups in every county of the state where they learn this legal process, and we work with each other to help each other out. Those who've been coming to the room know that we're also working on building a jury pool statewide so that when people get arrested, we're giving people who understand, you know, people who understand what the law is and the right to not only judge the facts but the law also, which is in our New York State Constitution. We're also working on grand juries. We're hoping to be able to, as we develop the state, to establish a grand jury in every county, in the county seat. We probably only need, I know we've been talking about this a little bit to a few people, and some people thought we needed a grand jury for every town, but you really don't. I mean, you know, if you're in a very large county, like, I know Dutchess County, for instance, we have two cities. You know, if you're in New York City, boy, that's pretty big. But some cities are quite large, so you'll need a lot more people involved. But you really only need, generally speaking, one grand jury in every county, because anything brought before the grand jury to be possibly brought into the courts is brought into the Supreme Court, and that's in the county seat. So you only need a grand jury that would meet in the county seat. And a grand jury is made up of 25 people, according to the Magna Carta. That's pretty loud. So about 25 people. But, you know, we might want to, if we can get 50 people a county, generally speaking, this way, you know, sometimes people can't get to a meeting that a grand jury is called, but we need to be able to call 25 people up in a county. And again, in New York City or someplace like that, you're going to need quite a bit more, and that has to be figured out. You'll have to figure out what they're doing right now with these phony baloney grand juries so we can get the real grand juries in there. And we do have a plan and a process that by which we could do this legally and in the way it's normally done. Anyway, mic's open. Questions? Comments?
John,
yes.
My name is David. I have two questions. The first is, how do you substantiate the legitimacy of the Continental Congress?
Oh, well, the Continental Congress came to being the first time. The first Continental Congress met in 1774, or five, I think it was five. They got together in 1775. They were called by the people. They were elected delegates, and they came together to discuss the problems with the king. It is a legal process in common law. It is the process by which all things happen. I mean, ultimately, the idea is also kind of pulled together from the grand jury or the freemen under the Magna Carta. And it was 25 men who made up the group, which that's why a grand jury is called, is 25 individuals. But it was 25 men that cut the king off on the highway and pulled out the axe and threatened his head if he didn't sign the Magna Carta. Well, you know, men have a right to be free. We don't have to ask permission. It is unalienable right. And once we understand that, it comes from God, and men are not to rule over other men. You know, we do give them a government. We create a government, and we give certain individuals certain, abilities or responsibilities to rule in certain ways, but they're restricted. You cannot control a person's behavior. Well, we have a constitutional crisis. In 1775, the second Continental Congress met, or 76, and that was not by accident. They had planned to meet should the king not respond.
John,
I'm going to try to answer the question. What?
Yeah, before you go on, are you linking the Continental Congress to Magna Carta? I mean, what legally...
Oh, yeah, there is a connection to that, but we'll get further into that later on. But the key thing is this, is the Second Continental Congress came with the same delegates, okay? Same delegates that were elected by the people of the 13 colonies. The 13 colonies, only 12 colonies elected delegates and came to the Congress. Eventually, the 13th came in later anyway. But they were elected individuals from all 13 colonies. And when they got together, when they were coming together, the revolution had started. The war was on, and the results of the 76 meet was the Declaration of Independence. Now, the Third Continental Congress, and they continued in power. The Continental Congress continued in power right up until 1789, I believe it was, when the U.S. Constitution was finally ratified by the Continental Congress. The Continental Congress ratified it. At that point, they yielded power over to the new elected government, George Washington being the first president of the United States under that constitution. Prior to that, by the way, there was 10 elected presidents, I believe. So that's what the history of the Continental Congress came to be. With all the problems we had, Robert Schultz, we the people who sued the government, went right all the way up to the Supreme Court over a period of 12 years for redress of grievances, and they ignored them all the way through. And we knew, and we've known before that, that we have a constitutional crisis. So the next step to a constitutional crisis was realized by Robert Schultz back in the beginning of 2009, and he met with numerous individuals. I know Michael Bodnarik was one of them. What's his name? Ed Griffin was another one. There was numerous people and other people, well-known historians and so on. And so they met together out on Jekyll Island in the very same room where the conspirators got together to make their plan with the Federal Reserve and so on way back in, goodness, I'm not sure what year that was in. Maybe it was 2008 or 9 or something, but whatever that was. So they met out there, and they decided and worked out the logistics of electing a Continental Congress. So the word went out. The network throughout the entire state, United States. We elected 140 delegates from 48 states. Two states did not comply or did not send delegates anyway. But we still had more. Percentage-wise, we had more states respond than we had colonies in the original. So these 140 individuals met in St. Louis, Missouri. I think it was October 10th or something like that of 2009. They met for 11 days. They hammered out what we now have as the Articles of Freedom, 61 pages or 63 pages. And they gave detailed instructions to each state government and to the federal government. They worked out all of the issues and the problems and the solutions and commanded them to go forward and do these certain things, and they ignored them. Now, we have authority. Obviously, we've been given authority by our founding fathers who established this whole process and put it forth, and it was what created this country. It gave us the Constitution. It gave us the Declaration of Independence. And it was a process left at any given time necessary that if we have a problem with a government, we can straighten it out. We don't have a problem with our government structural-wise. We have a problem with enemies within who have taken over our government, and they are traitors to liberty and the people of this country, the republic. And so the order went out. Matter of fact, we did use this in our court case, which they haven't answered yet. Their answer, I think, is due on April 8th. I'll have to check that date. But we did... put 8 pages in there on the Continental Congress, the meeting of the Continental Congress, the legal history, and the orders of the Continental Congress, and that they are guilty of high treason for not being obedient to the Continental Congress to begin with. But even more than that, how stupid are we? When they don't know the meaning of is or was or whatever word they're playing games with, you know, it says that our right to bear arms shall not be infringed. I can't see and understand those any other way. And It's very simple. It shouldn't be infringed. And if you're going to give someone a permit or a license to have a weapon or to protect themselves, well, you're infringing upon that person. You know, I had to wait 16 months to get a permit so that I wouldn't have to end up in jail to carry a gun. 16 months, that's an infringement, okay? The fact that I can't have an automatic weapon is an infringement. An assault rifle, it's an infringement. And I'll be straight out, and anybody that is honest will be straight out. The purpose of an automatic weapon, the purpose of any gun, ultimately, the purpose of the Second Amendment is to protect us from the government, an out-of-control government. We have a government that's talking and planning and sending out drones to take out American citizens. They're debating and talking about killing American citizens, something recently in the past few days they've been talking about in Congress. Some plan because they're looking for some problems and troubles. They're talking about the gun people. That's what they're talking about. And they're making plans. Okay? We have a serious problem here. Continental Congress is in order. It met. It was elected by the people. It's the voice of the people. There's only one power higher than the Continental Congress, and that's God. Other than that, Congress, the president, the governors, all of the legislators of every state must be, there's no choice, they must be obedient to that Continental Congress, that elected Continental Congress. They have no choice. To ignore them is an act of treason, and it's an act of high treason, because the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence makes it clear that we are kings without subjects, every single one of us. And when you go up against the king, and you try to disarm the king, or you assault the king, or you deprive the king of any of his liberty, that's high treason. So they're guilty of high treason. And that's what our lawsuit is about.
Thank you.
Welcome. Any John, other questions, comments, thoughts?
John?
Yes, Ken.
I think we do have subjects. They are the
True. You're right. We do. Go ahead.
They're the elected officials.
Amen. I agree. You're right. We do have subjects. They are our subjects.
Yeah.
And as a matter of fact, they are so much our subjects that we gave the legislators the authority and the right to write statutory law, which carries prison time for those subjects when they break it. You see, statutes are laws for municipalities, for elected individuals, for bureaucrats, for the commissioners. All of those who are in our government, they are under statutory law. They must follow the rules that were set forth. And it is U.S. Code 19 and U.S. Code 42 and 19 that is the most powerful of those of the codes that puts them in jeopardy of jail, unlimited time in jail, and unlimited monies that you can sue them for in a civil court if they come out and violate your unalienable rights. And when it becomes a conspiracy, it's all spelled out in there. When two or more people are involved, it becomes a conspiracy, and also the judges. If the judges have become aware of the breaking of the law, and all the judges we've been dealing with are aware of the breaking of the law, and they don't do anything to stop that, okay, it doesn't matter how they rule about us, but the bottom line, they see the law being broken. If they don't stop it, they become partners of the conspiracy and are liable to the same legal ramifications that these individuals have that we can put upon them. So we have a lot of ammo. And we have a lot of code to work for us. We have a lot of case law. Believe it or not, I mean, I haven't found many of them yet, but believe it or not, we have a lot of friends in the Supreme Court. They're up there, and we're trusting that God's going to put a few of them in places to make things work for us. So that's the best we can do. Anybody else? Any other questions or comments, or a new subject if you want, or anybody wants to add some other ideas or whatever? Mike, phone line is open here.
Everybody's bashful.
Carl, do you have anything?
Yes, I do, but I'm trying to do two things here, take care of my little one at the same time, so I can't really interact as much as though. But I would like to say, after like 15 minutes arguing my brother this Easter, him wanting to, and it started because he actually wants to possibly be a judge for his county, and he's a longtime cop who's on disability. Yes. But after realizing that he thinks that these laws are good because it's taking care of us, well, this is his argument, is that these statutes are good for the people. He really believes that as a former policeman for many years, that he's doing the work for the people, right? In fact, David Mongello's case, he thinks that had David let the statute run out, he wouldn't have wasted taxpayer dollars to pursue this thing and make it drawn out, and it was smart for the judge to bring the DA in. And I'm thinking now, just now while you're talking, I'm realizing I know what the problem is. I know where what he's afraid of. His bosses he thinks are more important than the people. His bosses, I think, is who he cares about. His paycheck, right? Not the people.
I would agree.
I couldn't figure out what's where it was going. So that, I just wanted to say that, an observation about my own family, and it's a hard fight what we're doing.
Yeah.
Well, the unfortunate truth is that people are afraid to be free. They don't know what it's like to be free. It's like a child going off on their own for the first time. I remember going into the service. I was 17 years old and turning 18, and I was going into the service and really the first time I was going to be away from home. It was a frightening thing. And I guess all of us remember that, going somewhere, leaving home and going on our own. It's a little scary. And I think that's the problem people have. Unfortunately, also, we have been raised in their environment. They have created the reality we live in. You know, they have taught us to be good law-abiding citizens. And what they really mean is good statute-abiding citizens. I am not a statute-abiding citizen. I am a good law-abiding people, one of the good law-abiding people of natural law. Thou shalt not kill. Thou shalt not steal. Thou shalt not covet. That's the laws that I obey. That's the law of the land. That's the Constitution. That's the Bill of Rights. That is the law, okay? But we've been programmed. I've had people, I've talked about these things. Oh, you can't give people tickets for, people have to get tickets if they speed. They have to have tickets if they pass lights. They have to have tickets for, no. Well, look, if you need a mommy and daddy, then that's fine. You can go pay your tickets. I'm not paying mine. I refuse to, and I don't have to, and I won't, and I don't. But the bottom line, okay, is this. You know, when we get control of our educational system, because that's where they get us.
Yeah.
You know, they indoctrinate us in schools. They give us 12 years of school, which nobody needs more than 8. And that's been proven by the schools in the 1800s. These people were far, they were college education when they came out of 8th grade. They may lead us to think something else, but that's the fact. That's the truth for anyone that's seen some of the tests of the 8th grade to graduate. Also, they take our children too young so that they can really indoctrinate them well. We try to get them at about age 4 or 5. They have the kindergarten, then they have the preschool, then they have the first start or get start or whatever they call that one. You know, they try to get them as young as possible because they want to indoctrinate them and make them good little commies or good little Nazis so they can report on their parents. When you get your children, they get out of school and you wonder, who the hell is this person in my house? I don't even know who this person is, you know, it's because you didn't raise them. Government did. And it's gotten worse. They show pictures of prisons and schools to young children, 7, 8, 9 years old, 6 years old. You know, what is this? Oh, that's a prison. What is this? Oh, that's a school. What is this? It's a prison. It's a prison. It's a prison. And they're showing pictures of schools. They're going with prisons. You know, you go in, they have metal detectors. They empty their pockets and their pocketbooks. They search them. They strip search some of these kids. They put handcuffs on them when they come in to confess to a counselor that they got a drug problem. Next thing, then they got to call the cops now. You know, there's no longer counseling. They call the cops. They betray the kids, and the problem gets worse. They got cops with guns or uniforms walking around the schools. I mean, what the hell is wrong with us? It's like being in a militarized zone. They're training our children to be used to these things. They're used to strip searches. We have situations of a bunch of young girls being constantly, you know, being strip searched in a particular area. The boys aren't being, but the girls are. And 18 years old, who the hell are these people? Because they find a little bit of pot on them. $25 fine. That's what I sat in the courts and I listened to these people coming into courts, being caught with a little bit of pot, and they get $25 fine. And these cops think that they can strip search our young baby daughters, 17, 18, 19 years old. Who the hell are these people? Why do we put up with that crap and that garbage? In one case, we had to almost do a little bit of a pushing to the father to come out. You going to let them do this to your daughter? Well, maybe we can get out of it. But then when they went to court, they found out it's going to be even worse, and they piled 3 more charges onto this young girl, resisting arrest, and we have recordings of the arrest. And believe me, there was no resisting arrest. This is a problem. If people want to live like slaves, well, they're going to live like slaves. Not me. I'm not going to do it. And I think most of the people who come to this our group is not going to do it. They can go to hell because they certainly – I'm not going to obey. And if everybody stood up and did that, we'd be free tomorrow. If everybody understood this and stepped up and said no, we would be free tomorrow.
Yeah.
But that's where we're at, you know. Just say no. I'll take the bullet before I go to their, prisons. Now, I don't mean for a traffic ticket or anything. I'm talking about when they come out for our guns. You know, they want to take you out to their, their camps. I don't want to go to their camps. I'd rather die. You know, we saw what happens in those camps. And just go on to Google and put in Holocaust. Go out to image. You want to see something? I would suggest maybe you shouldn't do this, but I'm going to tell you what you can do. I wished I didn't do it because I can never get these images out of my mind. They're in my brain, and I don't want them there. And I wish they didn't, so I'm giving you a warning. But for those who think that they want to go see this, go out to Google, click on images, put in the word Holocaust, and get ready to get sick to your stomach. Okay? And it is hard. That's where we're headed. Maybe that's what it takes for people to see that, to realize, to say no. There's so many people sitting on the fence. There's so many people sitting on the fence. And they're not doing anything. They're waiting. I don't know what they're waiting for. They're waiting. What are they waiting? If we don't do something soon, it's going to be too late. All you have to do is stand up and say no. Start with parking tickets. Start with moving violations. And if you get stuck with something else, do that. I mean, whatever it is, just say no. Take our courts back. We're working to take the Supreme Court back. And we have a really good plan, I think, set up for the Supreme Court. And we go, well, we're going to put them on the spot, real hardcore on the spot, U.S. Code spot. And we're going to reveal the fraud of the courts in the court to talk to them, let them know we're not in the fraud side of the court. We're in the common law side of the court. This is the people's court. It's not the government's court. It's not the judge's court. It's the people's court. But they think it's their court. And just buck the system. You know, just buck the system, and they put on these prune faces, and it's horrible. It's horrible. And they're all criminals, every single one of them. Totally, totally blown away on the criminality of what's taking place in our court systems. What a mess. What a mess. But we can get it back. I have faith that we can, but it takes the people to get it back. If the people aren't interested in becoming free and taking their freedom back and saving their posterity, because it's your children that's going to pay for your lack of movement today, if people aren't going to do something, then your children are going to pay. Not mine, because my children will be fighting with me. again, when that time comes, I'd rather die. I'm not going to their camps. You know, we're on the verge of a constitutional crisis. I mean, that's so obvious. We're on the verge of a monetary crisis. We've got a moral crisis. We got a crisis at every level of life in the United States. And you know, you look around and you see what's going on in other countries. They're failing too. You know, and are we that blind? Are we that blind that we think that we can't thrive, we can't make it, we can't do what? Something's going on. Yeah. It's evil and control. That's what's going on. And these people, they're not going to stop until they get their little new world order in place. You know? So, anyway. Anybody else want to rant a little bit?
Uh-huh. They've got another rifle or arms bill going in the Senate. Just got a letter from...
They got another what?
Another Second Amendment bill going in the Senate.
Trying to violate our Second Amendment again? Is that what you're saying, though?
Yeah.
It's obviously not doing any good for us. What the hell is wrong with us? How can we allow this to continue to go on and on and on and on? You know, again, I have a lot of hope for this gun movement now. You know, a lot of people who haven't been paying attention to what's going on, but they've owned guns, they enjoy guns, they go out hunting, they go out, you know, to the target practice, they teach their children how to use guns, and they're just enjoying their life, whatever it is. And they haven't been paying attention to the real problems. But now their guns are threatened. Now their eyes are opening. So we got a whole fresh new group of people coming in, huge numbers, okay, that are becoming aware that there is a serious problem in this country. And so we have an opportunity to slowly introduce them to all of the woes heading our way, should we not step up and take control. And hopefully they're going to step up and take control, you know. A lot of people are frightened. You can't let yourself wallow in the fright. We're all frightened. But you can't think about it. You've got to forget about it, you know. I remember when I was a kid in school, and I remember being taught, Patrick Henry saying, "Give me liberty or give me death." And I thought, wow, that is brave. That is, I don't know that I could do that. Give me liberty. Wow, you know. But now some years have gone by, and I don't have a problem with that. I'm better off dead than submitting to these people on that level anyway. You know, again, you get arrested for something, you're not going to do anything stupid or crazy. You're going to fight them in court and do all the legal things. Then you will win. It's an uphill battle, but you will win if you're persistent with it. And you'll win in the courts. And you'll get some money out of this if that's what you want to get. If you want to pursue it to that level, you can win and get it. The problem is that you have to deal with the woes during the time. But I'd much rather, why go to jail or pay the fine? Or any of that stuff, when you can fight it. And they probably will not put you in jail if you commit some kind of an action that they say is a crime and it isn't, and they take you to arraign you and you reject their arraignment. They probably will not put you in jail. They'll probably let you go on your own recognizance because I think they're taught in their silly little judge schools you got to get them to make some kind of a plea. We had a case out in Niagara County when he came before the judge, and he had been denying, you know, the judge the jurisdiction over and over and over again. Last time he went to court, they said, "Okay, next week we're going to pick the jury," and he said, "Excuse me, I did not plea. I have no plea in there." "Oh, well, the court has entered a plea here for you," and so on and so forth. And the court has entered, what kind of a plea was that? "Oh, the court has entered a plea of not guilty." "Oh, so the court has ruled that I am not guilty." They come to that conclusion, and he starts packing his stuff up, you know, with papers and stuff, says, "I can leave now," right? And he starts to walk away, and the judge says, "No, you can't. Where are you going?" He He says, "Am I in custody?" But the judge has refused the stay at all that time. He said, "Yes." So he put his papers back down. And he says, "Well, okay. let me ask you a question. Who made the decision for me? Who put my plea in for me? Because I certainly didn't do it." And the judge didn't talk. He didn't want to say. And so we're writing a paper for that to find out who put that plea in. Because he said to the judge, I may get this a little off, but basically what I'm saying is reasonably accurate. He said to the judge, well, if you put that plea in for me, then you're practicing law from the bench. How can you be the judge and my representative at the same time? Judge had nothing to say, couldn't say nothing. And he also didn't answer on who in the court put the plea in. And it was either him or the prosecutor or both. But both of them are in trouble now, and they know it. And then we filed a paper, what's called a writ of mandamus. That's got some problems with working on that, but it's an extraordinary writ to go to a higher court to force a lower court to be obedient to the law. And so that's what the writ of mandamus is. And in any event, you know, these people are frustrated when we come into the courts. They don't know what to do, and they only get themselves deeper and deeper into trouble. These guys are so deep. The conspiracy involved, you know, this guy's going to sue the judge and the prosecutor and all these people. He's going to sue them in the federal Supreme Court, under U.S. codes. And he's going to win. You know, I'm convinced of it. But we'll see how it goes. Again, everything is an uphill battle, no doubt. But all it takes is one battle in one town to win. And you don't have that problem in that town again. Anybody else coming behind you has a lot easier situation. You walk before the judge. Hey, judge, you don't have jurisdiction over me. Oh, crap, I'm not going to go through this again. All right, case dismissed. Next case. You know, and it needs enough of us to do that. It needs one writ of mandamus to go to the county court. And maybe even be rejected there. And another writ of mandamus going up to the Supreme Court. So what have we done? We've got the county level, we've got the Supreme Court level, and we've got one town in the county. We now just took over a county judicially once we win that. Okay? We served them notice. We've got 2 people, 3 people, 10 people, 20 people, 50 people doing this. All of a sudden, it's a boogie. Okay? But it starts with us. We have the knowledge. We know what we have to do. The question is, are we going to do it? And by the way, I see someone too out there does this work in New York City. It works any place. Statutes are not law. Now, we have to be careful because there are certain courts in New York City, certain city courts that have the authority of the Constitution, and they are what's called a court of record. So we have to look at that court first. I have not studied the courts of New York City. I'm sure it doesn't take much to look at. Just to look at the structure and figure out what courts are courts of record and what aren't. And I got to believe they've cut off little pieces of courts to deal with these statutory laws separated from the court of record because they need a militarized court. They need a maritime court in order to run this process. So I haven't looked to see how that's structured in New York City. New York City is very unique in many ways, and particularly in their court system. Yeah. And New York City does not have an elected sheriff. They have one sheriff for 5 counties, and that's unconstitutional. So, anyway, any other questions, comments, or anybody want to make some points or?
That brings up a question. How do you enforce the existence of sheriffs?
How do we what?
Enforce the existence of sheriffs.
Well, that's why we're doing a court case against the New York State for losing 7 sheriffs in our state. And also they're trying to move the control of the gun permits from the sheriff, who was elected, to the superintendent of state police, who was appointed by guess who, Mr. Cuomo himself, Mm-hmm. And he's already came out and made the statement that once it's given and he has control, if he is ordered to remove the guns from the people, he will do it. Okay? Get ready for that, people. Get ready for that. That's what's coming down the line. And so we need to move with the sheriff case real quick. We're planning in the next week or two, but you know, it all depends on money. That's the key thing. We're trying to get whatever we can in money. I'll be sending out a letter soon to all the people that are in the court cases and others, and, you know, asking for some more donations. If they could send in $20 or something, we'd have plenty of money. But we need money. But we're getting ready. This week, I'm going to try to start writing it this week or next weekend. I don't know. But I got to get to sit down and write. I have done some research where the sheriff comes from. We've got really good support. I mean, who are these people that think that they can take the king sheriff? The king sheriff is to protect the king. That's what the sheriff is all about. Let me repeat that. The purpose of the sheriff is to protect the king. We are the kings. Who the hell are these people? That's where we have to start. And, you know, the law is whatever you say it is. You make the law by decree. Whatever right you want, just decree it and take it, you got it. They can't make a law against it. As long as you don't hurt another human being, you can do whatever you please. You know, my daughter's 17, and I want to put a can of mace in her pocket, a little can. She goes out, and she has any problems, you know, pull out that mace. They're giving me a heart. You can't give your child any protection. You have to, who the hell are these people? They don't even want you to have protection. Has anybody ever gone up and looked at, I think it's New York Law 400 or something, or 265? I think, I'm not sure, one or the other, because both of them, they have to go. But one of them lists all the weapons that are against the law. Trust me, anybody stopped, almost anyone here could be put in jail, because they'll find something on you that's illegal and you shouldn't be carrying. That list of any kind of a thing to protect yourself just goes on and on and on and on and on. It's insane. And what do they do if you had to use your gun? If you have a gun and you got a permit, you're totally, you know, well, you're statuarized, okay? And you use your gun and you have to pull it out and you shoot somebody and you get plenty of witnesses saying, hey, this was self-defense, this guy did the right thing and whatever, okay? So you go down, you answer all their questions, and when you leave, are you going to leave with your gun? I know I will. But most people will not leave. I'm not leaving that police station without my gun. They're not going to keep my gun because every single one of them is going to be. I'm going to have to do a citizen's arrest right then and there for violating my unalienable rights. So if it's the town police or the state police, I'm going to call the sheriff. And that we have to educate our sheriffs, too, and we do have a plan for that. But it's going to take a group in every county to deal with their sheriff. And we want to write a small little instructional booklet from the people to their sheriff and show them very clearly in law and constitution what their job really is. And if they don't do their duty, then they are violating their duty and they are guilty of violating our rights by not protecting our rights. And we want to make that clear on paper in a very friendly way, and we want to meet with them. And then we want them to understand that you have a job to do, and we as a people, we have a job to do too, you know. Make it work. And any sheriff that doesn't work with us, I think we need to send them down to the unemployment lines. But that's only if we get up and do it. I mean, we got to get up and do it. We got to go get other people to get up and do it. You know? Only we can prevent tyranny. Anybody have a question, a comment, or something to share? Someone trying to talk? Anyway, the mic is open. We do have people in here with phones that can talk if they want. Step right up. Well, while we're waiting for someone who has something, we'll be posting all this new stuff up on our court access page, and we'll update the date, and you'll know it's the latest. But we have a lot of great stuff up there. We have a complete course on the common law in audio. We have quite a few hours of audio tape. We have four lectures up there by one of the most knowledgeable common law people that I'm aware of that taught this course. And we wrote a book, I forget how many pages. I didn't suddenly remember. But anyway, it's a court access book on how to access the courts, what the procedures are. We give an anatomy of a court case. We explain. I'm sure we're missing some stuff. And when people come up with questions or something, well, hey, you know, how do you do this? And, you know, where do you go from here? We'll realize where we're deficient, and we'll add some more papers to that, but we should be reasonably in good shape. It's about 180 pages, it looks like, 178 pages to be exact. Try to make it as simple as possible. It's called Common Law and Court Procedure. And it's free. We ask for a donation, but it's free. And again, we're traveling the state to give presentations. Anybody wants a presentation, get a group together. We'll head out to your county and we'll give a free presentation. We'll put a donation, can up there, and hopefully get enough to cover our gas costs and stuff. But we will be posting a lot of dates in the next few days for different areas. There are areas I don't have dates for yet, but we'll post them. The fact that we're going to be going down to Westchester and Rockland, we'll post that. I just don't have a day and a time yet, a place. We should have something on the western part of the state and a bunch of other areas we mentioned earlier today when we started this program. So, all right, again, mic is open. Anybody has anything?
I have a question there. As I said, I was still watching my little one. So I missed the short answer of the Continental Congress, or I'd like to get what makes it legal or what makes it a precedent for others to follow and to know that this is the right thing to do.
Right. Okay. I think the key thing that makes that legal is the fact that our founding fathers found that as the solution after they studied and looked out into the world. They saw what took place with the Magna Carta in 1215 and appreciated that. And also the fact that they come to realize, remember, they studied the 17th century philosophers, the great minds of our last 200, the greatest minds in the last maybe 400 or 500 years. And they also looked at, of course, the common law movement, which really started in England about 400 AD. So they got about, at that time, they had about, 1,400 years of history to look at. And how the process worked and what the king was all about and the purpose of the king and how that came to be with the putting together for the common law and how that grew out. And, of course, going back into Mosaic law, going into the first five books of the Bible, which really laid out the position and the points. And they turned to God, and people... a lot of people cringe when they start talking about God in public, but there's no way of talking about liberty without time to time bringing up the good Lord. And the bottom line is, remember, God said to Samuel when they wanted a king, hey, they got me, and they still wanted a king. Okay, well, we'll give them a king. But he was talking about a king being men. Our king is God himself, and that was the point. We answer to God. And with that, what gives me an authority, just logically putting this out, because this is what common law is really just seeing the facts and following the heart. That's what common law is. And where do I get the authority to rule over you? Where do I get the authority to make law about you? Where do I get the authority to control your behavior? Who am I that I could do those things? Who is anyone that they could do it to another man? But you see, that's the point, and that's the whole philosophy and really the foundation of the thought, so to speak, of common law. So when you decide, well, okay, let us get together and do what our founding fathers did, and that is let's elect delegates from each state, and let's send them someplace to sit and talk and figure out all the problems, list them out, and propose solutions. And that's what they did. That's the authority. And, you know, freedom is stepping up and taking it. Freedom is saying, I don't answer to you, I answer to God. Freedom is realizing that I have a responsibility not to injure or hurt you as my neighbor. And you don't have a right, or you have to be careful not to hurt me as your neighbor. That's what freedom is. And the Continental Congress made sense to our founding fathers. It is the authority that gave this country its beginnings. And I think that's really the key thing there. The fact that our founding fathers used the Continental Congress to give us a government to come together in hard times, to find solutions, come up with solutions when the solutions were rejected by their government, to come up with a Declaration of Independence, a Constitution, and a Bill of Rights. That's pretty powerful, and that's good history to me to say, well, when government falls and fails again, we've got the Continental Congress to fall upon.
If I may cut in there a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Another way of looking at it, I was listening to an interview between John Rappaport and Catherine, and they were talking about, you know, things, where we are as a country and that sort of thing, and fear, and the courage that those two put forward is just amazing and what they've done. But he mentioned a guy by the name of Clyde Jenkins, who's someone who impersonates Thomas Jefferson, and you could, like, hire him for events and stuff. But what's interesting is he knows his history, too. And so he asked Clyde Jenkins, like, as though you're Thomas Jefferson, you know, so what do you think today? Would you, you know, would the Republic still stand the way it is with 333 million people? And Clyde Jenkins or Thomas Jefferson said, no, we want to, I argued for multiple republics. And he said, every generation should have a new constitution. And I also remember, well, that was that end of that conversation. You know, I think he said some more.
Have a new constitution is what he said?
A new constitution every generation, yes.
Well,
I don't see.
I think that's an error in his.
Well, I don't know. I'm just bringing it forward, but perhaps. But
yeah.
One thing I remember is that in the Constitution, there's only supposed to be so many people per delegate or per representative. Like, we're way over. I think there was 20,000 people per representative.
Mm-hmm.
When today, we really, you know, we're way under the amount. We have way too far congressmen than for the amount of people in the public, according to that number in the Constitution. I don't remember what it was exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is, my personal feeling, observation about all this, is that we're going to have to start looking local anyway. We really need local solutions for things. Forget Congress. They signed this Monsanto Protection Act, and now they're claiming they don't even know. Well, they didn't know it was in there, in H.R. 933 or something like that. Oops, they made another mistake. It's like they're not even reading this stuff. So who cares what they say? They're not relevant. It's almost like they know they're not relevant. And to argue to the public that there's another, more relevant people, it's just so hard. I also want to put an example of how local power is making a difference by the town ordinance I mentioned from Sedgwick, Maine. They are now creating, they're immune from any federal and state statutes that require them to abide by certain FDA or whatever regulations.
Say that they're immune, but they're not.
They need the sheriff. They need the sheriff behind them. I concur. But I'm saying, my point is I think we're going to just have to start thinking locally, and that's how I look at this.
Well, I agree 100%. Yeah, I agree. We have to start thinking locally, and that's one of the main things we do talk about is local. It starts in your election district. It starts with you. It starts with you becoming a committee man in your election district and controlling every single power that affects your election district. So therefore, you know, your election district is affected by the people who run for office in your town, so you have to deal with that. Your election district is affected by a assembly district that your election district falls into. There are 150 assemblymen that are elected in the state of New York, and you are responsible for one of them to make sure that, first of all, you get someone up there that is constitutional and yeah?
Government has taken power over Turkey's crumbling Ottoman Empire. The rulers say they wanted the country of wrong and lawful.
Did anyone get that? Could you get a little closer to the mic? I didn't get that, or to the, you know, the mouthpiece on the phone. Did anyone get that statement or question?
It sounded like a recording, to be honest, like somebody didn't mute
the phone. Someone asked a question. Someone asked a question, and I couldn't get their voice. You want to ask that question again or make that statement again? It was a question or a statement. I don't know. Well, while we're waiting. So we have to deal with every single thing that affects our election district. You know, you have a county government, and you send a representative into the county for whatever it is, and it affects your election district. You get to decide on that. So everyone needs to become a committee man to be that decider. You know, all politics is local. And again, we need to get rid of the politics. And getting rid of politics is really, really simple. It's just understanding a concept, okay? It's a very simple thing. And once you understand the concept, I don't know how you can logically deduct any other solution. And the concept is this. You know, politics is all about control. One group wants to control another group, and they fight for power to control, to be the controller. And they control the other group by creating statutes, okay? And then they try to apply those statutes as law. Well, when we understand that statutes are not law and that they have no effect on me and they're totally irrelevant, we just eliminated politics from the whole political process because they can't control me no more, because they can't legislate control on my behavior. It's not possible, not in the process that has been constructed here originally for us in the United States, the Constitution. So, but, you know, going back a little bit, I think either you misunderstood that person or they were dead wrong concerning the new Constitution. We have a very good Constitution, and it is bare minimum. And if we held our government to the Constitution we have, we wouldn't have any problems at all, because they'd be restricted from doing anything but what they're allowed to do. It's such a small amount of work that they really have. And even our Bill of Rights, you know, the First Ten Amendments, we don't need any more than that. That's fine. You know, anything else is more. The bottom line is they can't legislate our behavior. So if I want to stick a knife in my pocket because I feel I might need to protect myself if I'm going to a certain place, whatever is in my mind, it's my business. If I want to put a gun in my pocket, if I want to put mace in my pocket, that's not a violation of law. That's a right to protect yourself. If I think I'm going to be violated, if I think someone's after me, if I think I'm going to a place or a neighborhood that I might not be accepted very well, and it doesn't matter. And Thomas Jefferson spoke about walking with a gun. I forget exactly what his statement was, but he spoke of it as his friend, and he also spoke of it as his protection. It equalizes all men, and so if nobody knows whether I have a gun or not, or my person, because there's no laws to prevent me from having one, someone with equal thoughts upon me is not going to execute those legal thoughts. They're not going to come and try to rob me or hurt me or something, because they don't know what I got or what I don't have, and this is all right. You know, when you walk the streets, no matter where you are with a gun, you feel a hell of a lot better, and you just don't worry about anything no more. because you know if something comes up, you can take care of it, you know? Three or four people try to push you around, you could deal with that, you know? So and they made all these things. They make us criminals to want to try to protect ourselves. They've made us criminals. Well, they're trying to make us criminals. But just say no, no. Don't give you jurisdiction. You try putting me in jail, I'm going to put you in jail. And I'm going to take everything I can get from you in the process. It may take me a couple of years to do that. It may take me 6 months. It may take me a year and a half. But I'm going to do it. I'm going to take your house, take your firstborn, take your right arm. I'm going to take everything I can get from you. And if you put me in jail for 30 days, I'm going to put you in jail for 60 days. I can convince any jury of that.
It wasn't constant. I think you said republics. I think you said multiple republics. Because I was trying to think about the number. Again, I don't know what it is in the Constitution, but you know that we're way off, right? The amount of representatives we have for the population.
Yeah, I don't know what the numbers are for that. I do know it's controlled by population.
Right.
But, huh?
Right. And so I'm just saying, he said multiple republics, like each state is its own country, right? We know that.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So I think, if anything, that's probably what, I mean, I have to go listen to it again, because I agree, the Constitution isn't a problem, it's the fact that we're not doing it.
We're not protecting it, and we're not exercising it. That's the truth, mm-hmm. Yes. Free speech begins with that. Freedom of religion and freedom of speech, and, you know, that's really where it all begins.
You know, the first Ten Amendments came from the people, because when they put the Constitution out for the states to ratify it, all the states wanted prohibitions, and that's why they put in the first Ten Amendments. There is no such thing as a Bill of Rights in this country. It's a Bill of Prohibitions, and it was put in there because the people asked for that in order to ratify the Constitution. And I know
Bill
I sound like
Rights,
a broken ring.
Bill of Rights is an improper statement of a Bill of Rights is not a good.
It's not right. It's not rights. It's the Bill of Prohibitions. If you read the preamble to the first Ten Amendments, you immediately find out that it's a Bill of Prohibitions, and it's there's no such thing as right.
Define prohibition.
It prevents people from doing something, like abridging her.
Okay, so it's a bill of prohibitions, a bill of preventing the government from doing anything concerning
exactly.
our rights.
Exactly.
And our rights are unalienable rights.
That came from the Declaration. It's not the Constitution.
Yeah, pretty much any of the any of the amendments after the 10th is subject, as far as I'm concerned. Although there are, I've been looking at them, and there are a few that are okay. You know, they make some changes that could be understandable changes. So we have to have a way to make amendments, and that's fine. But unfortunately, the devil or the enemy has really gotten a hold of our amendments, and the 16th Amendment, the 14th Amendment, the
17th
Amendment.
The government has no.
They're evil. Evil.
The government can't amend the first 10. There's nothing.
That's right. That's right.
To give them the constitutional right to amend them.
They can't change the body of the Constitution either. Like the 16th Amendment tried to change the body of the Constitution, and the 17th Amendment did the same thing. It totally destroyed the 17th Amendment. Totally destroyed the balance of control and power of the states. People don't understand how important our senators were. That they. You know, they need to have been appointed and sent by our state legislators, not by the people. And they get to choose two representatives. And it was really such an ingenious plan when you think about it, because, you know, the people have their representatives. They're called congressmen. And they send them out as their delegates to Washington, or they send them up to Albany. And they get to make the vote on a certain issue. And so the people send their representative, and as Carl was bringing up, you know, if so many, so much of a population gets, so many people gets a congressman. But But it was very important that the state had control of the Senate, because, you see, the Congress couldn't do anything without the Senate approval, and the Senate can't do anything without the Congress approval. So you have a situation that's sort of a deadlock. So if the state makes a mistake by pushing their delegates or the two representatives that they send as senators into the Washington, if they make a mistake or an error, well, the people have the opportunity to correct it with theirs. And if the people make a mistake, well, you know what? The legislators have the opportunity to protect that and change that with theirs. So it becomes a deadlock. It prevents things from getting out of line. The other thing is that the Senate was a lot easier to control because it's only 100 people than the Congress, which at this point I believe is still 430. And so it's a lot easier to control, 100 senators than it is to control 430. So it gave them that opportunity to really kind of get a lock on a lot easier the Senate. So that 17th Amendment is a major problem. It needs to go.
No, it isn't a problem. It isn't a problem. It didn't do anything to change the job of the Senate. It just changed the way it is elected, huh?
It is a problem because people believe it's law, and the Senate is elected by the people. Just think about this. Back way when, 6 years ago, 8 years ago, however far long ago it was, a lot of the states was moving on the 10th Amendment kick and saying, hey, wait a second, we're not going to allow this to go any further. We're going to leave the union, or we're threatening, or we're going to hold back our monies or something, okay? If the state legislators, okay, that had that kind of a feeling or a belief concerning, and there were 38 states involved in this movement, okay, if they had control of their senators, they could have stopped the whole thing by just ordering their senators, hey, guys, don't rule for that because we're going to pull you back if you do. And pull them back if they didn't, send someone else to change the vote.
They had the right to do that.
They could have, but they didn't.
Well, that's their problem.
Well, they don't believe that they got the right because they're told by the 17th Amendment that they're elected by the people now.
No, they're not told
by the state legislators. Huh?
They are not told to do anything different than the original.
Well, they believe. Reality is the way one perceives it. And so they believe
that
the people.
We can't do that. We can't go around saying what they believe and what they don't believe. We take what the law says and what the Constitution says.
Well, that's what you and I should do, but not them. And the general public at large don't know what
to do that. They've got to do that. You have
but they
to
don't
order.
Know. They're too stupid. They're ignorant. And I speak to myself first, but never go because I was ignorant too.
We can't accommodate that ignorance. We can take them the freak out of their job.
But it doesn't change the fact that the 37 or 38 states were inept. They did not have the ability to stop the problems. They could have stopped the problems 10 years ago.
Yeah.
They could have stopped the problems 40 years ago.
But there's another problem, and that is none of the states are sovereign right now. None of the states.
Well,
that's another problem.
It's the Federal Reserve. That's the problem. See, they all have their hands out.
Yeah, it's a state of mind. But you're absolutely right, because, look, they don't have a clue that America's about to disappear. They don't have a clue. Even these judges, if they really understood what they were doing, I think a lot of them would say, wait a second, man, I don't want to be part of this. But they don't even understand. They're so far removed, and they're so lost in their corruption that they don't know that America is about to be lost, that the light is about to go out. They just don't know it.
Well, there's not one state in the 50 that's sovereign. They all pay tax. They actually pay a tax to the federal government, and that makes them a subject of the federal government. And a subject of the federal government is not sovereign. And when they're subject, they become the property of the federal government. And when they're property of the federal government, they don't belong in the Congress at all. As a matter of fact, Congress hasn't passed a legitimate law since the 1930s because the states are not sovereign, therefore they are just the same as the federal territories.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree with you. You know, Ron Paul said in 1988 when he came out of Congress, I don't know how many terms he had run for prior to that, but it, you know, I would presume he ran for one term, possibly two, because I know he was in the Reagan administration. But Ron Paul, in 1988, after he left Congress, gave an interview, and we have that interview up on our Today's Issues page because it has everything to do with today. And the interview was, I don't know, between 50 or 60 minutes long. And one of the very first things he said is Congress is irrelevant. Congress thinks it has power, but it doesn't have any power. They're totally irrelevant. And that was back in 1988. He said they have no power, they have no authority, they control nothing. And it's a hell of an interview. Anybody hasn't seen that interview, you know, they should go out and see that interview. It's a good interview. But, yeah, you're absolutely right. But here is the problem. Even with the state being subject to the United States as a federal government, even though that is the case, nevertheless, 37 or 38 states wanted stuff to stop. And they couldn't stop it because they didn't control, or they didn't know that they could control, or they believe they can't control. However you want to put that, they didn't have control over their senators. If
the
38 states had control, or knew they could control, or could take control of their senators and knew they could do that, then they could have stopped a lot of the crap that we're dealing with today.
It's like the whole issue of consent. I mean, they've got to know what their power is.
People think that the 17th Amendment is real, including the states. And you know, as long as people are under the, they don't understand that nobody had the power to change the body of the Constitution. That whole structure of power was created in such a way that could not be altered, and the 17th Amendment altered that structure of power. The 16th Amendment tried to change the structure of power through money, through the income tax scheme, which is the largest Ponzi scheme ever. Even the Supreme Court has ruled numerous times that the 16th Amendment really doesn't change anything. People think it changed it, but it hasn't changed anything. It just puts it right back where it belongs. So the Supreme Court understood that. But people don't understand that, and that's why a lot of people go to jail. But some people who understand the process, of course, they go to jail too, because they don't know all these evil tricks. Like in your situation, you didn't know that tax court was a court of record. You know, there's a lot of things that at that time you didn't know, and it's true with all of us. We're ignorant to these things. We need to learn. If the people want to be ignorant and free, forget about it. It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen.
But
it doesn't exist.
The 16th Amendment falls apart on its own.
Yes, that's true. Using their own words.
It's in that document I sent you.
Absolutely. I agree. I saw that, and I had seen that before. I've learned that from other individuals. But, yes, you're absolutely right. And the problem is ignorance. Look at, if everybody knew statutes wasn't law, we wouldn't have any problems, would we?
No.
There'd be no control on people. We'd have our guns. We'd tell them to go to hell, and we challenge the jurisdiction every time they try to stick their nose in our business. Town courts would have shut down a long time ago because they wouldn't make the revenue to continue. You would be left with a county court and a Supreme Court in every county. That's what you would have. And cities would have that extra court because it's a larger population. They'll have city courts. Other than that, you wouldn't have it. You wouldn't have traffic court. You wouldn't have town courts. You wouldn't have these criminal courts. You wouldn't have people in jail. 85% of the people in jail are there because they opened their damn mouth. They should have kept it shut. They should have said no.
Lost the consent problem.
Yes. 85%. That's what Judge Bork said. 85% of the people in prison are there because they opened their mouth.
And he's one of the judges that wanted to inform them, too.
Yeah, he was one of the guys. Too bad we couldn't have gotten him into the Supreme Court.
Yeah, that's why he didn't get in there.
Yeah, they balked him.
Yeah.
But anyway, this is it's all about knowledge. if only people knew what we're trying to get the word out, what we've discovered here, and if everybody knew what we knew, America would be totally different tomorrow, because the people have the ability to change it all. We have people power right overnight.
By the way, if anybody wants to see the 16th Amendment that falls apart, get on to Poor Clyde's Almanac, and you'll find an article in the 16th Amendment. It's called The Coup de Grace of the 16th Amendment.
Anybody else have anything? Well, I'll tell you what, we can continue some more talk, but let's shut the I'm going to end the recording, so just give me a minute. They try to keep them down under 2 hours, even an hour and a half if we can, but right now it's about an hour and 45.